Chapter 2. The Shadow Hawk slid silently down through the night, its black hull almost invisible against the thick clouds that blotted out the light of moons and stars. Thermal dampening vanes jutted from its cunningly faceted, oily black canopy, the drop craft looking like a huge, broad-winged, spiny beetle. Just a few dozen meters below, foam flecked the acidic seas of Constanix II, lit by the bioluminescence of indigenous bacteria. In the distance, several kilometers from the Shadow Hawk's glide path, the navigation lights of multi-hull trawlers glinted and strobed, their red and green flashes almost lost in the deluge of rain that pattered from the dropship's hull. Bright wakes churned behind the ships as they ploughed back and forth, their reinforced scoop keels dredging thousands of tons of rich organic material for the Mechanicum's processors and biolaboratories. 2 kilometers ahead, floating half a kilometer above the ocean, the barge city of Atlas drifted through the downpour, smoke and steam from its furnace houses and foundries leaving a ruddy trail in its wake. A red glare from scores of manufactories and smelteries illuminated the heart of the 17-kilometer-wide edifice. Cranes and booms with amber lamps arrayed along their length sprawled from the wharfs that ringed Atlas, their orange glows little more than pinpricks in the darkness. Between the light of the docks and the fiery aura of the city centre lay a gloom of smog and lightlessness. It was towards this that the Shadow Hawk glided, with only the breeze whispering from its wingtips to betray its presence. The pilot guided the craft into a steep climb that turned into a swift dive, bypassing the bright quaysides and seeking the shelter of the shrouded city streets. The quiet hum of anti-grav motors rose as the stealth lander pitched towards an area of waste ground strewn with slag heaps and the acid-scarred skeletons of ancient machines. The smog swirled heavily as it landed, the Shadow Hawk nestling neatly between a great pile of discarded engine parts and a slope of rubble-littered spoil. Swathed by darkness, the ramp at the rear of the dropship eased open. There was no light from within, and the black-clad figures that emerged made barely a sound. Morphic treads on their boots muted their footfalls as 10 Raven Guard legionaries fanned out into a perimeter around their craft. Ducking through the opening, Korax followed, his armor the color of raven feathers, the white skin of his face obscured behind a layer of black camouflage. In his youth, he had hidden his flesh with the soot of Lysias's furnaces. These days, a more sophisticated compound he had developed with the Mechanicum of Kiavar served even better. He spoke a few words, the syllables barely heard. Even had some casual observer been close enough to hear, they would have made no sense of what had been said. The Primarch's voice was a combination of wind whispers and delicate sighs, almost indistinguishable from the keening of the breeze across the wasteland. The stork argo of the Legion, with which basic commands could be issued in total secrecy. Falling into pairs, the Raven Guard spread out further while Korax made his way towards the closest buildings. The wasteland, perhaps 10 hectares broad, was surrounded on 3 sides by high tenements. Though taller and reinforced with plasteel columns, the buildings bore a resemblance to the work habitats of Kiavar. But the razor wire-topped fences and barred windows reminded him more of the prison complexes on Lysias, and the memory stirred distaste in the Primarch. Feeble yellow light glowed from a handful of slit-like windows on the upper stories, but the Raven Guard had chosen the darkest part of night to make their insertion, between midnight and dawn, when the work teams would be sound asleep in their exhaustion, and he could hear no sounds of activity. The 4th edge of the waste ground petered out into a ferrocrete yard adjoining the empty shell of a sprawling factory. The site appeared to have been stripped of anything useful but for the walls of the buildings themselves. It was easy to conclude that Constanix II had been isolated, unable to ship in the raw materials needed for its manufactories due to the ruin storm and the other effects of the civil war spreading across the galaxy. The Mechanicum rulers had taken to cannibalizing their own, though to what end, Korax did not yet know. He was determined to find out. Issuing an order to his warriors to guard the landing zone and to use non-lethal force against any intruders if possible, the Primarch set off alone towards the empty factory. Beyond the grey slab walls, he could see the central temple of the Mechanicum priesthood soaring up from the heart of the city, a 300-meter-high ziggurat structure. Secondary turrets and bastions broke its outline, and curving access ways and lifting engines further crowded its stepped levels. At the summit burned a white flame, surrounded by smaller fires, massive chimneys looking like ceremonial braziers from this distance. Clear of the wasteland, Korax headed directly through the abandoned manufactorum. The wind keened through empty windows and across half-collapsed mezzanines. The darkness was no obstacle to the Primarch, and he navigated across desolate spaces that had once been assembly chambers. Even the doors to the Overseer's offices had been taken, creating a vast, cavernous interior. Cracked ferrocrete separated the various worksheds, here and there covered with patches of lichen and stunted plants. Korax realized that the rain that had fallen on the Shadowhawk since breaching the cloud layer did not blanket the city as it did the seas. Looking up at the low clouds, he could see just the faintest blur of a weather shield protecting Atlas from the elements. It was likely not the only energy defense possessed by the barge city. Even so, the air was thick with humidity, the acrid taste bringing to mind the chemical-tainted air of an ice refinery. The complex extended for about a kilometer, a distance quickly covered by the Primarch's long strides. Coming out of the other side of the buildings, he discovered a broad roadway that marked the inner perimeter of the factory site, potholes and wide welts in the surface showing that the poor maintenance extended beyond the manufactorum. There were no street lamps, but dim light trickled from the windows of the surrounding tenements, which rose up on either side like the walls of a ravine. The quiet was unlike any forge world he had ever seen. Normally the Mechanicum ran their production lines day and night, shift after shift of tech priests and labourers toiling for the glory of their machine god. Atlas was almost silent, starved of the ore and other materials it needed, the only sound the background electric buzz of generators feeding the worker habs. The Primarch was here to gather intelligence, but he was at a loss for a moment regarding where to find the information he desired. The stealthy entry of the Shadowhawk had precluded any form of close-range scan that might have been picked up by the local sensor grid, so his first priority was to establish the general layout and strategic disposition of the city. Equally important was the need to find out whether the ruling elite of the Mechanicum were aligned to the Word-Bearers, or if the Forge World had simply suffered attack from the Cameo. The first would be a simple matter of navigating the city from one side to the other. Korax's superior mind could catalogue everything he saw in minute detail, taking account of side routes, elevations, firing positions, choke points, and everything else he needed to know. The second was a far more difficult proposition and would require either careful first-hand observation or interaction with some of the locals. For both, time was limited. He did not know when the morning labour shift would begin, but it would be within a few hours. Korax took a pace out onto the roadway and then stopped. Someone was watching him. He scanned the soaring blocks around him and spied a silhouette at one of the lighted windows. It was a woman, but her back was turned. She was holding a fussing child, patting him gently on the back as he gazed down wide-eyed at the giant warrior. "I am not here," Korax thought, drawing on the inner power he had to cloud his presence from the perception of others. Just as it had once worked on prison guards and traitors, his innate ability shifted him from the conscious thoughts of the child, who shook his head in confusion and then laid his cheek upon his mother's shoulder, content. Though powerful, his ability was not without limit. It would be better to seek a less observed route into the city. Still cloaked by his aura of misdirection, Korax activated his flight pack. Metal-feathered wings extended with a soft whir. He took two steps and leapt into the air, the flight pack lifting him up into the smog that shrouded the rooftops of the tenements. Alighting on the flat summit of the closest, Korax broke into a run, eyes scanning left and right to take in the layout of the city as he sprinted along the wall at the roof's edge. Another bound took him across the road, gliding silently through the darkness like a bat. From building to building he roamed, crisscrossing the tightly packed worker blocks as he made his way towards the heart of Atlas. Among the rundown slums, he noticed a patch of light smeared in the fumes that blanketed the city. On artificial wings, he steered his way towards the illumination, dropping down between the hab blocks to settle on a metal walkway overlooking the scene. Below was a low, squat Mechanicum temple, much smaller than the main ziggurat. In shape, it was a truncated pyramid, 3 stories high, with yellow light spilling from arched windows that cast shadows of the skull-cog sigil of the machine god into the haze. Girder-like iron columns ran up the walls, becoming a vaulted scaffolding above the summit of the temple. Here, brass and silver icons hung from heavy chains, glinting in the glow of forge fire cast up from skylights in the roof, half hidden in the polluted swirl from a dozen short chimney stacks. The murmuring of voices, muted by thick walls, came to the Primarch's ears, and from his vantage point he watched cowled figures moving past the windows on the upper story. He left his perch and skimmed through the smog, aiming for the arched metalwork above one of the grand windows. Grasping hold of a pitted metal, he furled his wings and leaned closer. The story was a single chamber. At its heart, a furnace burned, its shutter doors wide open to spill heat and light across the gathered tech priests. Korax counted 5, standing in a group to his right, while shovel-handed servitors plodded back and forth from a fuel chute to the left, feeding the sacred fires of the Omnisire with pale fuel cubes. Korax looked for means of entry and exit, analyzing the tactical situation. The engine and cage of a conveyor stood not far from the window, and a spiral staircase on the far side of the chamber led up to the temple roof and down to the lower levels. The 5 tech priests were close to each other, a single target group, and with a conveyor carriage already on this floor, only the furnace servitors offered any potential additional threat, and they looked like monotasks, incapable of performing any other action. The ruddy walls of the temple room were adorned with inlaid precious metals, wrought into alchemical sigils and formulae, sprawling equations displayed as holy texts. Centered on the furnace, the tiled floor was inlaid with an obsidian-like stone in the shape of a large gear, diamonds fashioned as skulls set into the black material on each of the 12 lugs. Much of the room was filled with a clutter of ancient brass instruments on stands and altar tables. Astrolabes and quadrants were set out on velvet cloths, alongside torquatums and complex orreries. Ornately etched theodolites stood in front of shelves full of alembics and spectrographs, barometers and microscopes, magnetographs and oscilloscopes, las calipers and nanocouplers. Some were clearly replicas of far more ancient technologies, others appeared to be in functioning order. There seemed to be no pattern to the collection, a random conglomeration of artifacts of no use to the tech priest's work, but kept in this museum out of reverence as artifices of the machine god. The hoods of the Mechanicum priests swathed their faces in shadow, but the glassaic was not so thick that it barred their words from reaching the Primarch. Their low voices set the window's surface vibrating just enough for his keen ears to pick up every word now that he was close. "This latest call for our resources cannot be ignored," one of the tech priests said. A claw-handed cybernetic arm protruded from his left sleeve, gleaming in the furnace light. "Van Gelin made it clear that if we did not liquidate the 3rd district, then he would remove us and see us condemned to servitude."
"Would he really turn this Skitarii against his own?" asked another.
Korax identified the owner, a tall, barrel-chested individual with sapphire-like lenses shining in the shadow of his cowl.
"More than Skitarii. If the rumours from Iapetus are to be believed," said a third.
His breathing was laboured, the front of his robe open around a whirring, pumping machine set into his torso. Each time he spoke, pistons in the artificial lung clattered.
"The words may come from Van Gelin, but we know the command originates with Archmagos Delvia. He has the support of the Cognoscenti, and so we must obey."
"Delvia speaks the words of another."
This 4th voice was artificial, clipped and metallic.
"The word bearer's Navrakin shares equal blame. He is not to be trusted."
"This is irrelevant," said the 2nd tech priest. "Force wins all arguments."
"The Cognoscenti have not decreed such," said a 5th member of the group.
He was short, no more than 1.5 meters tall, his back cruelly bent, and the hunch further exaggerated by a sprawl of pipes curving from his spine to canisters around his waist.
"The Skitarii are loyal, but they will not follow blindly to act against their masters.
It is folly to contemplate armed resistance, said the first tech priest. What have we to lose by compliance? The word-bearers bring assurances from Mars. Delvia follows the will of the Fabricator General.
Such assurances can be easily falsified. The word-bearers seek to defy the Omnisire. Their creations are abhorrent. We cannot support this in good conscience.
It is not like you, Firax, to be so dismissive of learning, said the first voice. Lord Natherkin has opened our research to areas we thought impossible. Are these new creations any more abhorrent than what we do for Geller fields and warp drives?
Azor Natherkin is a liar, said the metallic voice. Pure knowledge resides not in the alternative, but in the reality we inhabit. He has corrupted Archmagos Delvia's thinking.
I will not be part of this rebellion, said the first tech priest, turning away.
Lacrimenthes, do not be hasty,
Firax called out as the recalcitrant tech priest headed towards the conveyor cage.
A rebellion against rebels, said the stunted one. Surely, a contradiction, a paradox.
The Primarch caught the look in the eyes of the dissident priest as he opened the doors of the cage. He saw conviction and defiance in that gaze, and knew in an instant that he meant to betray his companions. He had seen that look in the eyes of other traitors. He acted instantly, crashing through the window into the temple, showering broken glassaic, and leaping into the room. Before the tech priests reacted, he was next to the departing adept. The Primarch thrust out a hand, tempering his strength so that the blow merely knocked the semi-mechanical man to the ground rather than pulverizing his body.
Make no alarm,
Korax barked at the others, the authority in his voice quelling their instinct to shout out. He continued before the shock of his appearance wore off.
I am Korax of the Raven Guard, Primarch of the Emperor. We seek a similar end to the Word-Bearer's presence here.
The servitors continued their monotonous plodding as Primarch and Tech Priests stared at each other, motionless. In that moment, Korax calculated his next attack should the Mechanicum Priests oppose him. Half a dozen strides and four strikes from his lightning claws would see them all headless in 2 seconds.
The Liberator of Kiavar,
wheezed Firax, holding up a gnarled hand in a gesture of peace.
On Constanix, no less.
Is he dead?
Asked the priest with sapphire eyes, motioning towards Lacrimenthes' supine form.
Not yet, Korax replied, straightening. He knows more than he has told you.
Inquiry, said the artificially voiced tech priest. What brings the Lord of Deliverance to our planet?
My entrance will bring remark from others, said Korax, ignoring the question, as he glanced back at the shattered window and then to the conveyor. Is this place safe?
There are no others,
said the wheezing tech priest.
Just the five here, and mindless servitors. I am Firax Magos, biologist of the third district. Our domain has fallen in favor of late, and our adepts departed.
Loriac, said the tech priest with the metallic voice, Cybernetica, Magos Signoris of this temple. I am the Magos Logistica, Salvar Kena,
the hunchback told the Primarch, pulling back his hood to reveal a misshapen, wart-marked face. He pointed at the fallen tech priest.
That one is Lacrimenthes, our cogitatoris regular. I always thought him a lackey of Delvia. Never liked him.
Korax turned his attention to the sapphire-lensed adept, who appeared to be fixated on the unconscious tech priest. The adept noticed the silence and looked up at Korax. Shutters blinked rapidly over his blue eyepieces in surprise.
Bashalai, primus cogenitor of the biologists, he said abruptly.
He looked back at the downed tech priest, shaking his head in astonishment, his voice an awed whisper.
Lacrimenthes was augmented well, yet you felt him as easily as an infant.
I am a Primarch, Korax answered simply. He is just a man. Do you command any forces of note?
Some Skitari commanders may still answer to me,
said Loriac.
More may heed the word of a Primarch,
added Ferax.
You are the essence of the Omnisire given form. Perhaps even Delvia will heed your words when our protestations fall on uncaring ears.
If your Archmagos shares counsel with the Word-Bearers, I have no words for him, said Korax, lifting up a lightning claw. Only deeds.
Then what need have you of our warriors when the Legion of the Raven Guard awaits your command?
Asked Loriac. The question surprised Korax, causing him a moment's pause. He saw expectation in the faces of the tech priests, those whose faces were capable of movement. Loriac's was simply a steel mask, with a respirator grill and eye holes behind which blackened orbs regarded the Primarch without emotion.
I have enough legionaries with me for the task, said Korax. The remainder of my legion prosecutes the war against Horus on other worlds.
And how do you propose to bring Delvia to account?
Asked Loriac, his words implacable, and though the monotone irritated Korax, the truth of the question vexed him more.
Your fleet will annihilate Iapetus from orbit?
No,
Korax replied vehemently. That he had no fleet was irrelevant.
I will not condemn thousands of innocents to death so swiftly. Our fight is with the Archmagos and the Word-Bearers, not the people of Constanix. Such brutality is the weapon of our enemies, not the Raven Guard.
You showed no such mercy to the men and women of Kyavar,
said the hunchbacked Kanar. A necessary evil to prevent more casualties, Korax replied quietly, shaking his head.
The threat of greater destruction ended the war. I do not think that Delvir and this Word-Bearer commander will be swayed by such measures.
Perhaps you will fly to Iapetus tonight and storm the Grand Temple yourself, suggested Loriac.
His artificial voice made it impossible to judge if he was being sarcastic.
I might consider the possibility, the Primarch replied. Perhaps it would be better to gain control of Atlas first, all things being equal. With the power of a barge city to command, we can confront Delvir on a more even footing.
Silence followed as the Primarch and his potential allies regarded each other. Korax wondered if he could trust these men, half-men. From his experience with a Mechanicum who had come to Kyavar, he knew that their motives and agenda were different from those of pure flesh and blood. As a group, they seemed to be aligned against the Archmagos, but individually Korax had no measure of them or their trustworthiness. Now that he had revealed himself, only two courses presented themselves: make alliance with the priests of this district, or kill them now. Nero Thurman, one of Korax's foster mothers on Lycaeus, had lectured the young Primarch at length regarding the sanctity of life. Korax was loath to kill out of hand, but far more was at stake than the lives of five tech priests. Kanar seemed to have reached the same conclusion, his augmented brain thinking almost as quickly as the Primarch's.
We can only offer our assurances of common cause, said the Magos, his face twisting into a puckered grimace. Other than our lives, there is no bond we can give you for our good conduct. We have nothing to lose, grated Loriac. Lacrimenthes was correct in one regard. We obey the Archmagos, or we will be deemed enemy and destroyed. We are not alone. The cities of Pallas and Creus have moved to the southern currents, away from Iapetus, and their Mago Critarchs have withdrawn from the Council of the Cognoscenti. We must presume the other cities are in accord with the Archmagos.
How many other cities?
5, including the capital. For the moment, Delvia counts Atlas amongst his friends. Mago Critarch Van Gelin is of the Templum Etherica, as is the Archmagos. Even now, Atlas travels the capital current towards Iapetus.
Korax absorbed this information, comparing what he heard to what he knew of other Mechanicum societies. No two Forge World authorities were ever quite the same, and the specific nature of Constanix II's independent cities had given rise to a confederate arrangement that could be exploited. The Archmagos clearly held the centre of power, but only by the accord of the Cognoscenti, who it seemed were the paramount authorities on each of the barge cities. Unless the Word-Bearer's influence had extended far into the structure of the Mechanicum, Unlikely, given that they had been present for only a short while, and the tech priests were traditionally conservative towards any outside interference, it would be possible to regain the world with the removal of Delvia and the Word-Bearers. Van Gelin, your Mago Critarch, do you think he could be persuaded to align against the Archmagos? Korax asked. The tech priests looked at each other, their expressions doubtful.
Given sufficient leverage, he may be turned against Delvia,
wheezed Firax. And the rest of the Cognoscenti, how united will they be in purpose? Asked the Primarch. Would one be a natural successor to the Archmagos, loyal to our cause?
Such matters are complicated, answered Loriac. It is not for flesh to decide, but only to divine the will of the machine god.
Of course it is, thought Korax, mystified that such brilliant minds amongst the Mechanicum still clung to primitive techno-theologies. The tech guilds of Kievar, for all their sins, had never pretended to serve a supernatural power. That the Emperor had been forced to treat with such a superstitious cult was proof of Mars's importance to the Imperium, though, an importance that Korax was being forced to acknowledge at that precise moment. Influence is applied through a mixture of promise and threat, he said aloud, quoting another of his prison mentors. What promises does Delvia offer that we can counter?
Only one of us can perhaps answer that question, replied Kanar, gesturing towards the unconscious Lacrimenthis.
Can you wake him?
Easily enough, said Kanar.
The deformed Magos crossed the chamber and stooped over his fallen colleague. He reached a hand into the man's hood, fingers passing behind the neck. Lacrimenthis spasmed once, hard enough to lift his whole body from the floor. He continued to shudder slightly, fingers and feet twitching for several moments. His metallic claw scratched across the tiles, leaving three ragged marks.
Cerebral reboot, Kanar said by way of explanation. I installed it myself.
Lacrimenthis opened bloodshot eyes, vacant for a few seconds as they stared at the ceiling. Life returned as he sat up, actuators whirring somewhere inside his body. Korax moved into an attack stance, one hand drawn back as the tech priest's gaze met the Primarch's.
Make sure he makes no transmission,
Korax told the others, his deathly stare fixed on Lacrimenthis.
His signal to the temple circuit interface has been disconnected, Loriac said. No alarm will be raised.
Flesh is irrelevant,
said Lacrimenthis, focusing on Korax.
Threat of physical torture is inconsequential. My pain receptors have been reduced to minimum input.
Neural core damp renders coercion unnecessary, said Kanar. Core function downstrip will reveal memory receptacle interfaces. Your cooperation, however gained, is surplus.
Memory core access will hemorrhage organic life processes, Lacrimenthis protested, flexing his metal hand. Catastrophic personality failure would be irreversible. My loyalty to the wishes of the Archmagos and Mago Critarch should not render me subject to total subjectivity termination. I sought to act to the benefit of Third District.
And in doing so, acted against the determined order of compliance set by your direct Magos superior,
said Firax. He waved a hand towards Korax.
The prospects of the Third District's continued prominence and prosperity have been altered.
I am capable of altering my perception of the situation also, claimed Lacrimenthis. It seems detrimental to the cause of the temple to defy the will of the superior force, but the presence of the Primarch adjusts the parameters considerably.
Misfortune for you, said Kanar. Should logic dictate that the best interest of Third District be served by your promotion to Magos Superior, you would not hesitate to cross-connect purpose with that of Delvia once more. To change loyalty is proof that further alterations of allegiance may be forthcoming.
I would rather he was not killed if it could be avoided,
Korax said, understanding a little of Lacrimenthis's complaint. When the tech priest had made his decision to break from his fellows, there had been sense in complying with the Archmagos' demands rather than being replaced by someone else who would simply enact Delvia's wishes anyway. Korax did not wish to punish ignorance too severely. The Primarch was no stranger to moral compromise. During the uprisings in Lycaeus, he had needed every able man and woman for his freedom fighters, and not all of the prisoners on the moon had been political internees. Some had been justly convicted murderers, rapists, thieves, and wretches of the worst order. The overthrow of the corrupt regime had meant compromising the punishment and justice for the victims of these miscreants. But such was the necessity. In turn, once the techno-cults had been overthrown, those that survived had been granted pardon for their deeds during the war, as Korax had been forced to promise them. To the agents of the Mechanicum, the struggle between the forces of Horus and the Emperor might appear to be a morally ambivalent situation. Horus had done well to win the Fabricator General of Mars to his cause before his betrayal became known, and now it could not be guaranteed whether any individual Forge World was a potential ally or enemy of the Raven Guard.
"Total personality assimilation with the Temple will ensure there is no misdirection or falsification," announced Loriac. He waved for Kana and Basili to seize Lacrimenthes. "Precision is ultimate."
Lacrimenthes made no protest, shoulders sagging inside his heavy robe, resigned to his fate.
"His data core will relinquish its secrets over the next few hours, Primarch," said Kana. "If we hasten the process, it could lead to data corruption." "You doubt the strength of our dedication to an alliance, but how are we to know what you intend for the future of our world?" said Loriac, turning his attention back to Korax. "Before we sacrifice one of our own, can you assure us that we will not suffer the same fate as Kiavar?"
The discussion had reached an impasse, with both sides locked together by mutual need, yet unable to prove the commitment required to further their plans. Korax did not like to use his emperor-given gifts to cow others to his will. Such measures were rarely lasting, but he pulled himself up to his full height, head nearly scraping the ceiling of the temple, and allowed the grandeur of his Primarch essence to show. Pale flesh burned through blackened camouflage, revealing a ghost-white face, Korax's eyes becoming orbs of utter darkness. He held up his claws. A mental command sent blue fronds of energy crackling along their length.
"Should I wish it, I could kill you all now and depart. From here I would leave with my foes none the wiser to return with my legion to raise this planet and eradicate any threat it presents. No world is beyond the jurisdiction of the Emperor and his agents. 7 legions were sent to destroy me at Istvan, yet I survived. Do not think for a moment that this world possesses the power to destroy me. Any that move against the 19th, as sure as iron rusts and flesh fails, I will see them slain by my own hand. Your need is greater than mine. Do not scorn the opportunity of my presence."
The effect on the tech priests was immediate. Stunned by the magnificence and ferocity of the creature before them, they backed away, heads bowed to the authority of the Primarch. Korax allowed his presence to fade, reeling back the majesty of his nature behind walls of discipline and humility. The facade he had built during those years, hiding amongst the prisoners of Lycaeus, felt like a return to normality rather than a caging of his might. It had always been his preference to inspire his followers with deeds and words rather than force subservience through coercion. His eyes dimmed as he looked at the cowering Magi.
"Such is the threat," he said quietly.
He held out a hand, offering reassurance and friendship.
"The promise is to free Constanix from the coming tyranny of Delvier and the Wordbearers. Make no mistake, an alliance with their kind will doom your planet to slavery or destruction. Make your choice well."